Listen up, people. Over the years, I've learned how important hydration is in my workouts and everyday life. It's the key to helping my body move, recover, and just have a good time when I'm exercising and staying active. Things go even better when I'm well hydrated before I even start moving. Noom Hydration doesn't want you to wait to hydrate. They want you to start hydrated. Noom Sport Hydration Tablets hydrate better than water alone. Just drop them in your water, dissolve, and enjoy. They contain 5 essential electrolytes and come in crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade, lemon lime, and many more. They also have non-GMO vegan and gluten-free ingredients and only 1 gram of sugar. Noom hydrates you so you can do more, go further, and recover faster. And that means you can have a heck of a lot more fun. Since hydrated humans have the most fun, head over to shop now on noonlife.com and pick some up today so you're ready for anything. Because anything can happen after noon.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go!
With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. ERLEADA may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. ERLEADA can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if ERLEADA is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit ERLEADA.com. CP439267V1.
Welcome to Fantasy Feud, a pitcherless baseball podcast where we're tackling the most relevant debates in fantasy baseball each week. I'm Sarah Sanchez, and I'm here with Shelley Verstraete to talk through both sides of the hottest fantasy baseball debates right now with some of the greatest minds in the industry. It was a big week of injury news and suspensions. There are a ton of fab opportunities on the horizon, and we have the perfect guest to talk through all of that. But before we introduce our guest, Shelley, how did your fantasy baseball week in fab go?
I guess it was okay until, you know, I usually do fab like Saturdays and then do it again like on Sunday morning, so I'm not doing it all on Sunday evenings. But I, you know, load up Twitter right before fab runs and I see that Bednar and Diaz are out, and in two of my leagues they're like both of my closers, so I was just like, well, that's great. So, you know, I try to get like I'm an anti-Chapman person just because of reasons. We won't get into that, but word. So I was like, I'll go after Holdeman or something like that. But it's just like, you can't, like, when you lose two closers like that, again, you know, Diaz has kind of been up and down and hurt, and same as Bednar too, so it's not like they've been helping me out, but it's just, it was just like a major gut punch. I'm just like, I just wanted to just be like, shut down computer, I don't care, but still gotta do it.
Yeah, saves have been the bane of my existence this season. I mixed it up a lot in terms of who I had for closers. And so I have some Romano in some places. I had some Adbert Alzolay in some places that did not work out well for me. So, you know, you got to play the game, people. I missed out on Class A, who I really liked and I wish I would have taken more of in a ton of places. But saves have really been the toughest thing for me this year. I have Jose Alvarado on a team that I'm really excited about, and I am really not excited about the Phillies closer by committee situation, but we're going to get into fabbing for saves and more. And we're going to get into a lot of Edwin Diaz on this episode with our guests. We're so excited to welcome Vlad Sudler to the show. You know Vlad as the head of MLB content for FPN Fantasy. He's also the host of the FPN Baseball podcast. And of course, every Saturday and Sunday, his must read Trust the Gut post for fabbing your weekend. How's it going, Vlad? Thanks for joining us here on the show.
Hey, Sarah. Hey, Shelley. Thank you so much for having me. My debut here on Fantasy Feud. I'm very excited.
we're very excited. It's our 21st episode, so this show's legally able to drink now. And, you know, we all might need some drinks with the fabbing that we've been doing these days. But we'll get into it.
And it doesn't end. I mean, we still have another more than half of a season to go, and with probably very little dollars down the stretch.
Yeah. One of the debates I'm most excited for today is like where your budget should be and what you look for, because I think that's something we don't talk a lot about. I think a lot of people probably assume you should half and half it. I know some people like set their budgets week by week, but we'll get into all of that. Rules of the road, before we get into these debates, it's a debate podcast. So instead of just talking through the issues like you hear on your regular podcast, we're going to do this through a series of mini debates. We have a clock and moderator in each debate to keep us on track. That moderator role will rotate. So the debaters will each get 3 minutes to make their case. There'll be a question and answer period between the debaters where the moderator might ask some questions and the debaters might too. And then we have a series of 1 minute rebuttals. Once those rebuttals are over, we're closing the book on that debate and moving on to the next one. But hopefully you've learned a little bit that will help you with your fantasy teams going forward. And we're just going to jump right in. I'm moderating the first debate. I was at this game. It's one of the craziest things I've ever seen in person. Edwin Diaz came out at Wrigley Field and was immediately tossed without throwing a pitch. It was a real confusing situation in the stands. Sticky stuff. And that is an automatic 10-game suspension. I don't know if it's been announced yet, but if it hasn't been announced, it will. Saves have been really hard to fab for. So if you have Diaz, as Shelley was alluding to earlier, this is a nightmare week. And I think I heard Jeff Erickson say that the Diaz ejection happened like 1 minute after NFBC fab ran. It was really tight there in terms of where it happened. It was like right about the time people probably had all their bids in and weren't planning on replacing their closer. So this is definitely a situation you're going to deal with next week on the waiver wire. The Mets have not been great for secondary save opportunities. I can say this as a person who briefly had Adam Ottavino on a few rosters, briefly had Reed Garrett on a few rosters. So the question for y'all this week is, if you have Diaz, where are you going for saves? You go into Diaz, you go into the Mets, you look into the field. And Vlad, as our guest, you get to kick us off.
So this is a very tough situation for the Mets because their bullpen activity, or at least the high leverage stuff or the closing opportunities, have been very far and few between and very inconsistent. So Reed Garrett was an absolute monster in the first month of April. And since then, you've seen, I mean, no offense, almost Cubs-like with Adam Ottavino blowing in, and then got a Jake Diekman here and there, and it's just been really rough. So I believe it's a very hard scenario to adjust and prepare for, because I just feel like the manager is just going to give different people opportunities over these next, 9 days that are remaining while Diaz is out. So I'm looking away from the field. To the field, away from the Mets situation. One guy I'm intrigued by is John Brebbia of the White Sox. The big issue there, of course, is that White Sox stink, don't win games. And he's in a co-closer situation with Michael Kopech, but it's very clear because Kopech has been horrendous. I think like a 5+ ERA at this point. Brebbia has been rock solid over the last 3 weeks or so in ERA, I think right around one, striking some guys out. If they do open up any leads or save opportunities, I think he's in the mix. And then maybe Chad Green. I don't know how many leagues he's still available in, maybe in some 12 teamers, but until Yimi Garcia comes back, as we know, Jordan Romano has been shut down for now. So it'll be Chad Green, I think, until Yimi Garcia comes back. And even then there are no guarantees, but Toronto and sadly the White Sox are the two areas that I'm looking at.
Love the call out on Toronto. In GLARF, Dave McDonald was lamenting the fact that Chad Green was already rostered. And I admit I did that because I missed out on Yimi Garcia and that was my backup plan. I just held him for a week just in case. I'm really glad I did. But I don't think that's the case that everywhere. I think Chad Green is a great call out here. Shelley, what's your case that is not the field for Diaz?
I'm going to stick with Diaz here. Like I was saying at the beginning, I have him in a couple of leagues. One is a keeper aspect, so it's a totally different, ball of wax than like your redraft leagues. But the Mets tried, to go in another direction, and it didn't go well. Again, Diaz was hurt, and he wasn't pitching well, stuff like that. But Reed Garrett was, and then he wasn't. Like, he's been kind of atrocious here for a little bit. And, same thing with Ottavino. So even though the Mets, I mean, they have looked better, power of Grimace, right? They have looked better as of late. Who knows how long it's going to last, but it's only a 10-game suspension, right? And I think that they're just going to go right back to him. And I think he has looked better since he's come off the IL. So I think that he'll still be the most safest bet out of, I mean, even like the, you know, the Brebbias and the Greens, because I mean, I don't think Brebbia has a better situation than, you know, in Chicago on the South side than, you know, in Queens. Right. So I'm just going to stick with Diaz. Hopefully I can, you know, snag one of these guys and pick up some extra saves, but for the long term, give me Diaz.
Yeah, it's worth noting that, like, Edwin Diaz has struggled this season, but you're probably not moving on from him. He's definitely someone you're stashing. You're not dropping him over a 10-game sticky Seth suspension. Although, I think I was listening to Eno earlier today. It might have been somebody else. I listened to, like, two podcasts back-to-back that were talking about Edwin Diaz and these issues. And the spin rate has been a thing for him, so it's not all that surprising that he has had that's something he would go to as he's trying to come back from early season struggles. Vlad, I guess my question for you with Brebbia in particular, you absolutely nailed it. The White Sox don't win very much, which means there's not very many save opportunities. Brebbia is intriguing to me, though, because Michael Kopech is one of the best trade chips the White Sox have. And so I'm curious, if you're trying to pick up Brebbia on the thesis of the case that he's going to get some saves, that's a guy you could theoretically hold. That's not necessarily a guy that you're just looking for a week or two of saves. That's a guy you're looking for after Kopech is traded. So I wonder what the fab bid you would place on that would be.
So I did go after him in some leagues this past week, 15 teamers, where he was, available where I'm looking for a third or even fourth closer. I think in some 15 team leagues, I want to, you get a little too comfortable with your situation. And before you know it, I remember, on my auction team, I had a stretch where Evan Phillips went on the IL, Mason Miller wasn't getting saves, and Kirby Yates wasn't getting any opportunities. And any other week, I mean, that's like an ideal trio, and you feel comfortable until you're not. And then before you know it, it's, you know, you lost two guys, someone's on IL, and you're just hurting. You're hurting for saves, and then you're desperate. So I do like to have room for like a bench stash in case I do need a fourth closer. And in leagues where you can pick up midweek, I know that's obviously not all leagues, but for example, the White Sox do have some winnable games this weekend. They're going to face the Rockies at home for a weekend. So I think that's a good scenario. They'll face Miami next weekend. So there are some opportunities. And I think, I don't even know what sort of, trade leverage the White Sox have with Kopech at this point, because he has been just so awful. Like, I've been at a point with him over the last month where I would rather not have saves than have him on my team, because he just wrecks the ratios every single time he's out there.
That's kind of how I felt about Ryan Sanic when I had him a while back, and now he's racking up the saves again. But the second he stopped racking them up, I was just like, I have to move on from this because the ratios are atrocious. And I hear that and feel that in my soul. Shelley, you're talking about, you know, just holding on to Edwin Diaz. Maybe you try to pick somebody up, but really just doubling down on the guy who has the job and has the role. I think there is wisdom in that. I'm curious, what is the breaking point for you with a guy who's at this point, Edwin Diaz has had a lost the job issue, I'm stepping back from the role issue, an injury issue, and now the sticky Seth suspension. I feel like that's a cascading effect, right? Like, we're seeing a guy who is struggling and looking for any opportunity to fix it. And I just am not entirely sure he's going to.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally fair. And yeah, I mean, if he comes off the suspension and has like a, you know, a 2-3 disastrous week stretch, then yeah, I might even bench him. I don't know if I would necessarily drop him unless he loses the role again. But again, I don't know really where the Mets would go again. But yeah, that's totally fair. But again, like, I'm still going to double down because I still believe in him. Maybe it's not going to be this season because just everything has kind of just snowballed this year. Like a couple years ago, he went through this, right, where he was just atrocious. And then he came back for like 2 or 3 year stretch where he was just absolutely dominant. So you know, maybe I, you know, maybe I picked the wrong guy and he'll be amazing next year. So, but yeah, I'm just going to double down and just be like, this is the guy I picked up at the beginning of the season. There's not much really on the waiver wire that I really feel confident with. So I'm just going to stick with him.
Yeah. And for the record, over at Roster Resource right now, there are currently 4 closers listed. Reed Garrett, Adam Ottavino, Dednell Nunez, and Jake Diekman are all listed as potential closers for the Mets. So I'm not really sure how many saves you're getting from the Mets. I, again, tried the Adam Ottavino route. Don't recommend it. We'll go into rebuttals. Vlad, you have 1 minute.
Rebuttals. I mean, I don't know. I think I'm sometimes just agreeable on things. I think, yeah, I mean, with Edwin Diaz, Shelley nailed it. I mean, it does feel kind of like a lost season for him. There are just sometimes these snowballing effects, and it started with, you know, with everything last year, recovering this year, and based on his career and his body of work, he was essentially tapped the first closer off draft boards. It was like, you know, him and Devin Williams, and for whatever reason, there's always this attrition in the top of the closer pool. Every year there's some issue with those guys just not panning out. It just doesn't feel to me, like, I don't think you drop him. I think that's really honestly ridiculous, unless you're literally in a position in a league where you have no saves already. Right. If you have Edwin Diaz and you never got any of the closers, you've got 2 saves, you're not catching up to the person ahead of you, you know, 14th place or 13th, whatever in the rankings, there's nothing you can do about it. So, I don't know if that was much of a rebuttal, but I don't know if I could see the 1 minute clock, but I have a feeling I'm up.
You're good. And honestly, we don't always have full on rebuttals here. A lot of times we come to consensus because, frankly, a lot of the people that we have on the show are really amazing fantasy baseball players, and we don't always disagree on strategy all that much, but I think the process is one of the things that gets us to looking at things a different way and coming up to different solutions. So I don't really think that rebutting in 100% total is necessary on this show. Shelley, do you have a rebuttal to the looking at the field role and some of the options that Vlad mentioned, or do you also sort of agree?
Yeah. I guess I kind of agree. I mean, I think with the whole field thing, it's going to be one of those, like, every single week, you're going to have to check back on it. And at least with Diaz, you know, you're not going to, you know, use him for a week and a half, but you could just put him in there, like, once he comes back, and at least theoretically, you won't have to keep churning for saves. But yeah, I agree. It really does stink, because if you took Diaz, he's probably the first closer off the board, maybe second. So it just stinks that you probably wasted a 4th or 5th round pick on a really rocky season.
Indeed. And man, looking back at these draft boards in the offseason is going to be interesting for sure. I have 1 20-second question for both of you before we move on to our next debate. The name out of all the names that I just read who are listed as closers on Roster Resource right now is Dednell Nunez. And I'm curious what y'all think of Dednell. Vlad, you first.
I don't think I have much of an opinion on him. I feel like just when you think you know everybody in the league, you figure out something new. But, you know, he's actually, you would think he's a younger guy, but he's been in the Mets system for many years. He's actually 28 years old. But he's been, not only has he been looking good, but his expected metrics, so like his XFIP, his Sierra, is like close to 1.5, which is, you know, better than his 2.5 ERA. But either way, I mean, he kind of fits the bill of somebody that could fit the role, because we're talking about like a, you know, 39% strikeout rate with a 4% walk rate. Granted, very small sample size here of 18 innings, but it's not bad. He's a, you know, as a righty and get the job done. We'll see. Sneaky. I like it.
Yeah, I actually, I was watching him pitch against the Cubs the other day in person. And the reason I kind of was like, wait a second, this guy kind of pops. And then earlier today, I heard Eno mention him as well. And I was kind of like, okay, so it's not just me. Like, he passes the eye test, but he also passes whatever's going on in Eno's stuff model. Shelly, what do you think of Dednell Nunez as a potential pickup here? I'm talking like a dog.
Yeah. And especially in, like, you know, 20 or 30 team leagues where just anyone who has a pulse is a good pickup, you know, go ahead, pick him up. Take a flyer.
Love a good flyer. All right. That's our first debate. We are going to move on to our second debate, where we're going to look at some starting pitching. It looks like Shelley is going to moderate this one.
Yeah. So, you know, other than Edwin Diaz, that situation, a lot of starting pitching hit the IL this week. We had Braxton Garrett, Taijuan Walker, Danny Jimenez, you know, just to name a few. Which teams have the deepest rotation for speculating on starters? And what type of bids are you planning on placing on those players? Sarah, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I love this question. And the two teams that I have been looking for starter speculation most of the season are the Phillies and the Marlins. The Marlins just got kind of hammered this year with injuries, and they have a really deep bench of guys who can start. Waiting on Max Meyer, like still waiting on Max Meyer. We watched him do great things. I don't know what they're saving his innings for. Like, let's bring him back up and see what he can do for five or six. But, you know, Rodery Munoz was pretty good when he came up. There are some names in this Marlins rotation. Ryan Weathers, before he got hurt, was throwing at the top velocity that he has thrown for a long time. And he looked really good in his early start. So I feel like the Marlins are one of these places where you just kind of have a pitching factory and they just turn out starting pitching. The injury to Jesus Luzardo is really sad and unfortunate, but it means that there's an opportunity for somebody to come up in that Marlins rotation. I'm curious to see who it is. I have Max Meyer in two or three DCs, and I've just been waiting for my ability to like slot him back in there because I feel like he's the best starting pitcher on my bench who is not getting a chance. And then the Philadelphia Phillies, man, like who saw this coming? I hate to say this because I don't wish injury on anyone, but an injury to Taijuan Walker was kind of a blessing for fantasy managers who have either Spencer Turnbull or Matt Strom sitting on their rosters. Both of those guys can shove and will shove and can get you some wins. I've had Matt Strom on a handful of teams this year. I've been really reticent to drop him because he's the type of guy who you can slot in to vulture some wins, vulture some saves. But if the Phillies find themselves in a situation where Spencer Turnbull or Christopher Sanchez blows up, the guy who comes in as the long relief guy there is Matt Strom. And Matt Strom can not only like get you pristine ratios, he can get you Ks, which is a really rare thing from that middle release spot. So I like what you can do with the Phillies and Marlins depth charts. And that's sort of where I'm looking to speculate where there are injuries, wherever those injuries have happened.
Yeah, I definitely like those two teams, especially Marlins at home. Like if you have like a good stream, that could possibly work. And, you know, Spencer Turnbull was like amazing to start the season. I'm just like, I'm looking at the Marlins rotation and I used to like really write about prospects and there are guys on there that I'm like, I have never heard of these people. And I feel really bad about saying that. but Vlad, we'll kick it over to you.
Yeah, so the one thing I will counter on the Phillies is I agree with the fact that, yeah, Matt Strom, especially in a 15-teamer, you don't know who you want to start as your last starter. You have him in, and you know you'll get a few clean innings from him and maybe vulture something like you said. He's been really good for the last couple of years. But that's like it's a hard rotation to stream because – they have a solid set. You know, you've got your four guys, and I think we've all been in the same boat. We've all been waiting for collectively Taijuan Walker for, you know, obviously, like you said, not for injury to happen, but for like, hey, just move out of the way. But it worked out because for Spencer Turnbull, he was never going to pitch the full season. He had that dominant April first 6 weeks, and then he was pulled back into the bullpen. So that made sense. And so now that his, I guess, season was kind of elongated, now you can bring him in. Hopefully he'll be good. He was great as a starter, horrible as a reliever. And then we'll see. He's going to visit Detroit or he's facing the Tigers, his old team. So that'll be fun and interesting. The Marlins, like, yeah, Shelley's right. I mean, these are guys that I'm not very familiar with, like, you know, Valente Belotto. Sorry, I didn't know who he was before the season. Was not a DC target. Shockingly, Trevor Rogers has, just when you've given up on him, all of a sudden he's good again. He's been available in those 15 teamers, but I think he's got a string of three straight starts with like two runs or less allowed. So he's a little back. And then Yonny Chirinos, you can almost count on him every year for like some random team to come in and just, you know, you stream him for a couple of weeks. But I would say teams like the Brewers are always kind of like a little factory, like Tobias Myers out of nowhere, solid for three, four straight starts. Would I be surprised? They just traded for Dallas Keuchel. He's been half dead for the last, you know, half decade. And you never know. He might come back here. I think he's pitching Wednesday against the Rangers and his former team. He might pitch well. I like, you know, my 50th round pick in DC's was Cal Quantrill. And I thought that I could occasionally stream him for like some road starts, but I had no idea he'd be actually really good. And one of his pitches, I think, grades out. If you go to, you know, Run Value in Baseball Savant, it's like one of the best pitches in baseball this year, which is shocking. He's been reliable and dependable. So, you know, he's against the White Sox this week on the road. So I like that start. So yeah, there are different places I think we can go to. And let's see, you know, everyone gave up on Spencer Arrighetti. He's at home against the Rockies this week. I know he's got like a 7 ERA, but I feel like against the road Rockies, that's a good place to bounce back.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've actually picked up Quantrill in a couple of my 15 teamers because he has been pitching well. So hopefully that continues. I guess I'll start with questions now. This is going to be really hard because this is like, I don't really feel great about any of the Phillies guy. I mean, any of the Marlins guys. So I'm just going to go over to Philly. Do you, Sarah, do you think that Spencer Turnbull can reclaim that early season magic, or is it just more of I'm just going to use him for, you know, the start against the Tigers and then see where it goes from there?
I actually loved what Spencer Turnbull did earlier this season. I thought it was kind of a shame that Taiwan Walker got healthy and took his spot. I wanted to see more of what Spencer Turnbull could do. I agree 100% with Vlad. He was never going to throw a full season, so this sort of gave the Phillies a way to put him in the bullpen, manage his innings a little bit. But I think you watch what he does in his next start. And if it's 5-6 innings of shoving, you just leave him in because he's not going to throw you 150 innings plus this year, but you take what you can get and you might be getting peak innings a lot like what Garrett Crochet has been doing for the White Sox this season. Look, that's going to run out at some point, right? Like the team is going to pull the plug. He's going to get hurt, whatever. But as long as it's happening, you just go with it. Spencer Turnbull looks like a guy who was mismanaged a little bit by the Tigers, had some injury issues, and now has a chip on his shoulder the size of Texas. And I love a guy with a chip on his shoulder. I'm big on Spencer Turnbull this season. You know, both of you were sort of like, who are these names on the Marlins? And I agree with you. And also I have watched too many random Marlins guys come up and look really good in that park. So that's a place I like to go for streamers, similar to the Guardians, right? It's like, oh, the Guardians are going to give this guy a start. Let's see what happens. Although I don't trust that park as much anymore.
And by the way, the ultimate test will be for Turnbull. If everything lines up the way it should with him starting in Detroit on Wednesday, he would line up the following week, next week, for at the Cubs in Wrigley on Tuesday and then at Truist against the Braves. So that'll be a tough test for him and a tough stream, technically.
Yeah, the Cubs are always tough because of the wind. Like the wind changes that park so much that you just don't know what Wrigley you're going to get.
Yeah, definitely. I'm gonna kick it over to Vlad now. I was just looking at the schedule, and I think it's kind of funny. Next week, Tobias Myers faces Cal Quantrill in Colorado. I just thought it was funny because we brought those guys up. But because, you know, pitching is all fluid, do you think that any of the guys that you mentioned, do you think that there's any long-term success, or is this going to be a week-by-week situation for you?
A lot of these guys are, you know, they're good until they aren't. And also, and what I mean by that is there can be a lot of like overall opinions on someone. Like people can just like Tobias Myers just, you know, shoved for 3-4 straight starts. Then he goes to Colorado, has a bad one, and then people just give up on him. And I think a lot of the sort of more advanced, sharper players, people that are paying attention, kind of throw that out of, you know, like if Tobias Myers had a really good start at Colorado, okay, now we're really paying attention. But I think the opposite happens where people won't necessarily notice the start. They'll just look at the box score and see like a, you know, a bad line and drop them. So yeah, all these guys are week to week, honestly. I mean, every pitcher is, even the healthy ones. Like we're all, you know, I mean, Garrett Crochet and Ronaldo Lopez are kind of my two late round picks. And I just am waiting for the other shoe to drop. And I pray that it doesn't, but you just know this is baseball and eventually it does.
eventually it does. And hopefully it doesn't happen on one weekend when you're trying to do fab, because that's not fun to do. So Sarah, I guess I'll kick it over to you for rebuttals.
Yeah, I don't disagree with much of what Vlad said. I think that looking at streaming in these situations is critically important. But I do think it's worth knowing, like, if you're trying to cut your process short a little bit in terms of where you're looking for ads, knowing the teams and locations you trust can help with that. And whether that is, I'm going to stream a guy who might be risky sometimes because he's playing in Seattle or he's playing in San Francisco. There were a handful of guys this weekend that I was like, oh, well, I want that guy because he's in a park that I feel like he's going to do really well in, as opposed to Great American Ballpark. And I'm not shy about that. Also looking at some of the teams that are doing the best work. It's weird for me to have Philadelphia be one of those teams this season. I think Philly is a place that we think of as a hitter's ballpark. We think of that as a slugging team, but their pitching has been on point this season, and I'm happy to be along for the ride. Obviously, I agree with Vlad that the Brewers are a great place to stream starters as well. And the only other team that we haven't really talked about here that I would like to mention as you're looking for these types of streams is the Mariners. It's another place where I feel like they just kind of randomly bring up a guy, and if he's pitching at home, he's probably going to have a pretty good start. So if you're looking for people to replace your injured pitchers, start with teams, see what's going on in their depth chart, and go from there.
And on the flip side of that is sometimes the ballpark just leads you in the right direction. Like if you're looking at park factors and, you know, rolling trends the last few years, and you just know, I mean, we as fantasy players, we know that Oakland is a great place for pitchers, San Francisco. So there are opportunities there. There's always a reason why maybe somebody isn't performing. It's not always skill-wise. Like Keaton Wynn was a big prospect coming into the year, at least, you know, fantasy-wise, like a kind of a little sleeper. And he's been just bombarded. But that's because he hasn't been healthy all season. Same thing with Blake Snell and this and that. So those are the exceptions. But on the flip side of that is, you know, the Reds are a team that I usually don't ever I don't target pitchers for, you know, it's really hard to play them. Like even Hunter Green, who I knew was incredibly talented, who I know if he pitched for the Giants would be like a Cy Young contender, but it's hard for me to draft players with high draft capital, knowing that half their starts are in these, you know, amazing home parks where they can just get shelled at any time.
Yeah, that was great. Did you have any other rebuttal, or was that it?
No, I feel good about this one. I think we wrapped that one up and definitely gave people some teams to look for their starting pitchers. We're going to move on to our third debate, but first we have to take a quick break for our sponsors. On the flip side, we're going to talk a little bit about fab process. We're going to talk about some weekly league moves and how you're dealing with schedule decisions. We also have our love it or leave it. So stick around, but first a quick break.
Listen up, people. Over the years, I've learned how important hydration is in my workouts and everyday life. It's the key to helping my body move, recover, and just have a good time when I'm exercising and staying active. Things go even better when I'm well hydrated before I even start moving. Noon Hydration doesn't want you to wait to hydrate. They want you to start hydrated. Noon Sport Hydration Tablets hydrate better than water alone. Just drop them in your water, dissolve, and enjoy. They contain 5 essential electrolytes and come in crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade, lemon lime, and many more. They also have non-GMO vegan and gluten-free ingredients and only 1 gram of sugar. Noon hydrates you so you can do more, go further, and recover faster. And that means you can have a heck of a lot more fun. Since hydrated humans have the most fun, head over to shop now on noonlife.com and pick some up today so you're ready for anything, because anything can happen after noon.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erlita, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erlita is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erlita may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erlita can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erlita is right for you. or tap this ad to visit Erlita.com. CP43926-7V1.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we are back. I think Shelley is actually moderating our fab process debate, so I'm going to turn things back over to Shelley.
Thank you. Well, since Vlad is here, we have to talk about fab process, right? So we're about almost halfway through the season. How much fab should we have left? Is it totally league dependent? Do you have guidelines for, you know, your league size, whatever? What are those? Why? Vlad, we'll kick it over to you first.
Yeah, I think so at this point in the season, we're about at the halfway point going to the All-Star break. We know a lot of people give up or they go into football or they're just not competitive in their league. You're going to have less people fighting for players and you'll be able to get them for cheaper in general. So in all my years of playing, you just, if you have more than half of your money for the second half of the season, you're just going to be overbidding on a lot of players. It's similar to an auction with like some money left at the table. So I don't mind being aggressive early on. I think also because I'm writing my article, I feel like I have to be extra aggressive on certain players. I always kind of stick within my range out there, but I just know that I'm not always going to get players cheap. And like we were talking about before the show, like a Spencer Horwitz, for example, just like a guy I had to have no matter what. And sometimes you just like convince yourself you're like in the fab zone for the weekend and you just keep like bumping bids. But to your original question, I think, I have about anywhere between 200 to 400 in most of my leagues. I feel like 200 is still a little dangerous with so many fab periods to go, like, 11 or 12 or whatever it is. But I feel like I'd feel comfortable with like over 400 at this point, but a lot of it is like self-discipline and recognizing tendencies of your league. Like you may be playing in three leagues, but you notice one of your leagues, they're always like double the amount of players claimed every week. And you just see more people like of the 15 team league, 9 people are involved every single week, whereas in another one, maybe 5 or 6 are. And so you know where to pick your spots and to leave more money and to be more aggressive on. And I think the other big thing that I've really been working on, I feel like I've been getting better at this year, is not just blindly setting my backup, my conditional bids. Like, if I'm going for a, was like, say, Tyler Soderstrom, and he was available in an FBC main event where he was 90% rostered already. So I know he's not available in many leagues, and I figured he'd go for like a higher, bigger bid. I would place my $20, $30 bid for him, and then below that, all the other corner infielders, there's no reason for me, for like the JD Davises or Kiner Falefas or whomever of the world, for me to be going like 13 and then 11 and then 9. And I'm basically just kind of giving away free money. I feel like I need to keep all those guys like below $3, but then spend the extra time in the order of which I get them. Because if I don't get Soderstrom, who's next? How do they fit in my lineup for the week? So I know I took that in 15 different places, but yeah, there it is.
No, you can preach all day about fab. We will totally listen. Sarah, what's been your process?
Yeah, I far be it for me to argue with the literal fab whisperer here. I like everything that Vlad just said in terms of process. I particularly like the front loading part of this, which is a mistake I made early as a fantasy player, sort of thinking that I had to have a certain budget for each week and I wanted to have $500 at the midpoint and all this stuff. And then I realized that I was doing exactly what Vlad said. I was overbidding at the end. And I think that one of the things we miss with setting budgets like that is if you win a really impactful player in April, you get so many more months of that player than if you win that really impactful player in August. And it's just, they're not commensurate bids. The 150 or 200 that you spend on a guy who gets called up early, a Paul Skeens, if he was available. I think he was drafted everywhere, but you know, like a guy who's gonna, Luis Heel is a great example. I actually placed some really big bids on Luis Heel the first bad period this year when I just had a hunch it might work. And if it did work, it was gonna be great. And that was probably the, in my mind, the largest outlay that I had ever done the first week of the season for some of those early drafts. And it has paid off in spades. I am so glad I spent the, you know, 150, 160 that I spent on Luis Heel there. I have not regretted it at all. In a couple of places, I tried to do that with DL Hall. It didn't work out as well, but I think the process was good. The idea was that this is a potential really impactful pitcher. Spend the money now, get a full season of him. The only things that I would add, I think you need to know your league rules here a little bit. So if there are $0 bids allowed, then it's okay to wind up in a situation where you don't have any fab in, say, August or September, because you can sort of waterfall some stuff where you're like, $0 on a guy and I can still fill these holes. If you don't have $0 bids allowed and you are out of fab in the month of September, that is a very rough position to recover from. I've watched players who had sizable leads in their leagues in the NFBC lose those leads because they had no fab left and they had no way to replace an injured player. They had no way to fill their roster spots. You don't want to be taking zeros in September. So I think that managing fab is about making sure, I 100% agree that spending early is more impactful than spending late, that it's okay to go into the midpoint of the season with say $300 or $400 left. You can make that work depending on your team needs. Could go into that period with $200 left and like just kind of be really budget conscious, knowing you're going to miss out when Noel V. Marte comes available off his suspension or something like that. But maybe you have other guys and it's fine. But I do think that knowing your league rules here is important. If you can trade for fab, if you have $0 bids, all of those types of things change some of the calculuses that we're talking about.
Yeah, definitely. I know in one league, like the first 2 or 3 weeks, I was just like crazily low in the standings. Like I had like 20 or 30 points between me and the last person. So I was just like throwing fab everywhere. And now I'm like third. And maybe it was because my players started hitting and pitching well. I don't know. Maybe it was fab. I haven't really delved into how I've rebounded so quickly. But in other leagues, I haven't been aggressive because I don't know. I get too scared that I'm going to run out of fab and I'm kind of paying for it this year. So I don't know. Thank you for at least telling me what I need to do for next year. And it's just weird that I used to not be that way and I don't know what happened this year. But yeah, that happens.
And it's also very natural tendency to, no matter who we are, how long we've played, is to over panic when things are off to a bad start. Like if there's a big crucial injury, like you lose, I remember one league, I think it was the SiriusXM FSGA league, and we drafted Devin Williams and then 5 minutes later he was hurt. And so all of a sudden, you know, you're drafting closers earlier, then you're chasing them all year. You just, you know, and so you're going to overspend to make sure that you're making up for it. And so that's why kind of, balanced drafting is so important. You go into the season where you kind of are comfortable everywhere. And so if you take a little hit here or there, it doesn't hit you as much in the fab fields, I guess you could say, where you're all of a sudden like you're panicking and you kind of want to overspend. So it's really hard to be able to control that.
I love that advice. And I would also just say that one of the things that was hardest for me to learn as I moved into leagues that used fab is what the price point is in a league. And part of that is that some of my leagues are super aggressive. I mean, GLARF is a league of people who play the NFBC main event. I have not played an NFBC main event yet. We'll get there someday. But like that was a radically different pool to swim in than anything I had ever been playing in before. And I learned pretty quick that if I didn't bump my bids 20%, I was never going to get anyone. There was no way I was going to get any of the players that I was looking at or any of the people that were interesting. I also learned a lot about setting a really deep waterfall, which is not something I'd had to do just when I was playing in my traditional home leagues. And that was kind of a learning curve, right? But not every league I play in requires that level of bidding. And if I do that, I'm leaving money on the table. So if I win a player by $60 or $70 because I'm bidding every league the way I would bid GLARF, that's not good either. I'm wasting money that I could theoretically be using for players down the road. The last thing I'll say here that I think is, and I don't know how to quantify this, but I do think it is worth actually, I'm going to steal a Vlad line here for a second. Trust your gut sometimes. Like, the guy who maybe saved my season a couple of years ago, I've talked about this on the show before, Brandon Drury, I just kind of, you know, second week of the season, saw that he kind of looked like he was raking and he had a spot and he had multiple position eligibility. I was like, hey, I'm going to throw $12 on Brandon Drury. Why not? He said after all year, he was great. He was outstanding, absolute league winner that year. And I got him before anybody was on board because I saw the move and I invested in it. That doesn't always work. I've done that with other players where I dropped them 3 weeks later and, you know, you just live with it. We were just talking about like Johnny DeLuca and Tyler Black and players that you don't, that didn't, that could be that guy, but weren't for whatever reason. But as long as those aren't guys you're spending $200 on, you can afford to make a few mistakes there. If you get in early on a guy like that, you can actually win your league on the way, on that Fab waiver.
Yeah, so much is like reading the tea leaves. Like, I feel like a lot of times people will overreact on a guy getting a lot of playing time and having a good week, but they happen to be playing the hitter in Cincinnati and in Coors, and the typical outfielder was hurt or something, and so they were getting more playing time. And then people buy in, they're paying max price for somebody, and they're not looking ahead to the next week saying, oh, wait, this guy is going to play Seattle and the Yankees this week and like impossible matchups. And so so you almost have to look ahead in these types of scenarios and think about, okay, let people fight over these guys for the top price and let me set my waterfall, my conditional bids in the best way possible. And a lot of times the best gems fall in that way. I mean, I remember, go ahead on what we have on the outline today, but like a random $1 Luis Matos, that was my sixth, waterfall in the right week was money in the bank when I really needed RBI. So sometimes you get lucky and people just go nuts on the rookies and they're not even thinking about, wait, this guy, how could possibly Tyler Black get sent down? He's a big prospect. How can Joey Loperfido get sent down? These guys are getting sent down two times in a season. You just don't know. So it's like reading the tea leaves and not overspending and following the market in mass.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. And the last thing that I will say here, I feel like we're not going to do rebuttals on this one because we all just kind of agree, but this is a great conversation anyway, and I'm really glad we're having it. The making sure that you have $12 in your back pocket for that last week can be the difference between winning a league and not winning a league. And I found that out. I've told this story before, but I'll tell it one more time. The year that I won GLARF, I did not think I could win. I thought I could come in second at best. I thought Jenny Butler had it locked up. She was 6.5 points ahead of me heading into the final day of the season. That didn't seem like anything that I could do anything about. But I spent my last $6 of fab on Kikuchi because I thought he might vulture a win down the stretch. And he did. And Clayton Kershaw got a win. And she didn't get any wins that day. And wins were just bunched super tight. And it meant that I made up like 4 points there and a couple of other points somewhere else. And I was staring at it as the games ended. And I was just like, wait a second. I think I just won the league on $6 of fab that I spent on Yusei Kikuchi, that if I hadn't had that money, that would not have happened. So having that little cushion at the very end for the one guy who can do the thing is important. And don't sell yourself out entirely if you don't have $0 bids, but make sure you can make the moves you need to spend the money when you think it'll be most impactful. And if you're right, you're right. We are going to move on. I think that wraps that debate. I don't even know if it was a debate. I think it was just a discussion of fab, but one that I found super illustrative. And Vlad, thank you for sharing all of your thoughts there. We're going to move on to our next debate. And Vlad is going to moderate this one for us. So Vlad, if you want to take us into debate number four.
Yeah, this is one that I thought about. In our FTN Discord, someone asked a question about my general strategy about players in a weekly league in a 5-game week versus a 7-game week. And this question maybe wasn't, it was kind of a little obvious. It was, a Brandon Nimmo for 5 games, as the Mets had 5 games this week, versus like an Alec Burleson 7-game week. And to me, it was a no-brainer. It's like, not only is Alec Burleson red hot and he's hitting second on, the Cardinals, like, yeah, it's a no-brainer. But also leaning, as I'm doing more work on the back end, actually mentioned Jenny Butler, her and I do the back end work for our projections at FTN. So we are projecting weekly lineups, like going into detail of when the backup catcher is going to get into the lineup. And all those things add up to something before we run our simulations for, you know, it gives you like a plate appearance and like a value amount. So in that case, I looked at it, Nimmo's projected for 21 plate appearances for the week, where for this five games, and then 31 for Burleson. So it's like 10 extra at bats, plate appearance is a no brainer. But how many times have you been, you know, in a league where you're like, oh, in NFBC, a half week, it's like, oh, my guy is only playing two games. It's like, you know, Bregman for two, you bench them and they go off. That's like the, you know, three home runs in two games. And so it's that constant struggle and battle. And so I guess that's my question is, how comfortable are you benching a top 50 hitter who only has five games versus somebody who's not as strong of a fantasy producer, not as reliable for a seven game week? So we'll start with Shelly.
I mean, I came up with this particular scenario like a couple weeks ago when Cleveland had like that two game week from Monday to Thursday. And I have had on this particular team, I had a couple of Cleveland guys. I had Kwan and Tyler Freeman, and they were both at the time. Tyler Freeman was kind of like hitting leadoff, hitting at the top, hitting ninth, but it was still, you know, accumulating runs. I decided to go for it. And again, Kwan has been amazing. You don't really take him out of your lineup currently. The Steven, AKA Slugger Kwan. but yeah, maybe I probably should have started Tyler Freeman, but I don't know. It's more of who are they facing? How is the team going? Because I think teams can kind of get into a role, right? So I'm just more of just start your studs. You know, with the Brandon Nimmo one and the Burleson one, yeah, I totally agree going with Burleson there. Just how well he's been hitting. So yeah, I'm usually start your studs, but obviously take a look at the matchups, take a look at who you have on the bench and kind of look how they're currently going and make go there. But I typically just go ahead and just go with my guys.
And that's an interesting one that you brought up because it's like a quandary that I go through weekly because Tyler Freeman is the righty, Stephen Kwan's the lefty. They're both at the top of the lineup. And you, and I'm guessing for that half week, they probably were facing both lefties. So it kind of made common sense. Freeman's hot right now, facing two lefties. He hits whatever 400, you know, wOBA against them. Let me play him over Kwan. And so, yeah, that's the type of thing where it makes it really tough. So completely understand that. Sarah, where are you on that?
So I want to preface this by saying it depends on the part of the season you're in, and it also depends on what you need. So at the start of the season, I'm very prone to just play my dudes and see what happens. I want to know what happens. I'm not trying to get a game like five games here, seven games here, unless I have guys who are in real platoon situations like a Jake Fraley or something like that. I'm really just trying to play my studs and see what happens. But I do think that when you get to this part of the season, where you're looking at counting stats and you realize that, oh, I've got this guy who's mostly in my lineup for ratios. He doesn't have that many games this week. He's here for batting average. He might score some runs, but what I really need is bulk. What I really need is home runs and the runs and RBIs that come with that. I might opt for a seven game slugger over a guy who is going to give me five games and I'm not, and he might sit one of them to try to get him extra rest. I find that one of the things that I've noticed over the last couple of years, and I've never done any deep data dive on this, but it seems to happen a lot. When those built-in rest days are on the schedule, I often find that players get a day off in addition to those. People are trying to get them rest. So it's not like you have a five-game week. It really quickly becomes a four-game week for most of your players, unless they are a guy who plays almost every day. And so what, you know, when you're talking about a seven-game week versus a four-game week, that becomes a huge difference for those players. It seems counterintuitive, but you're almost less likely to get that rest day on a seven game schedule than you are on a five game schedule because you can't get the back-to-back day off. So it really depends on what I'm chasing at that point in the season. It really depends on things like pitching matchups and what I need. But as the season goes on and I start to look at, I really need home runs or I really need steals, I'm more likely to play my seven game guy who's going to steal a bunch of bases, trying to blanking on a name right now. I mean, Bryce Terang staying in my lineup no matter what. So that's terrible. That's a terrible example at the moment. And Nelson Velasquez, rest his heart, just got sent down, but he's coming back up, and I will re-roster him when he comes back up. But Nelson Velasquez is a good example of, like, if the Royals have seven games and I need home runs, that's why he's here. So I'm just going to see what happens when he's in the major leagues. I am well aware that he's not in the major leagues right now here.
Yeah, I mean, no, that, and I've been chasing these, like, the Velasquez hot streak for a long time, and just, like, waiting for it to happen. And right when, you know, he looked at the schedule, they got, you know, a really nice couple of weeks, seven game weeks, and all of a sudden he's demoted. But hey, he'll be back. You know, he will hit his home runs. No, those are both great points by both of you. I was just thinking, I was just having a little bit of pain, gut pain, if you will, from thinking about when the Rays, it was like maybe 3 weeks ago, they had a two-game series, I think, against the Marlins, and facing, you know, the Marlins' heavy lefty rotation. And they were facing, like, you know, Trevor Rogers, Lizardo, whoever. And Brandon Lau, typically sits against lefties. And I just didn't notice beforehand. I had him or Caballero, one of the two I needed to play, and I needed power more. But I figured, oh, it's two lefties. Lau will at least sit one, if not both. Caballero for sure is going to play. I didn't check the lineup just in time, and I think Lau hit, like, he had like two home runs and six RBI in that series. That's a killer. We're looking at it right now with, like, who sat Mark Vientos for a five-game week? Who thought he was going to have two home runs against Cole as we record? It's crazy.
It is crazy. And actually, I'm glad you bring up both of those examples, because this is why I hate rostering Rays players. Guessing what the Rays are going to do, I have lost so many stats trying to guess what the Rays are going to do. Mark Vientos is a great example. I actually had Mark Vientos on a couple of teams and I dropped him because it looked like when JD Martinez got picked up that there was just no room for Mark Vientos. It seemed pretty clear that they were going to go with Brett Beatty, and he has been an absolute stud. If you have Mark Vientos on your team right now, it's been rare that you could pick up power on the waiver wire this year, and Mark Vientos was one of the guys that you could pick up power on the waiver wire with. So kudos to everybody that got him. Another guy like that, Jesus Sanchez, who goes through these spurts where he's like absolutely incredible for a few weeks and just looks otherworldly and then goes back to normal. He was available on some waiver wires this week. God bless everyone who got Jesus Sanchez. I missed out by $10 in the league I needed him most. Sad face. But yeah, that's part of the game that we play. And it really depends on what you need as to whether you're starting these guys or sitting them. And these are the tough decisions that we have to make as managers each week.
Any rebuttals to that, Shelley?
No, but I feel you with that Brandon Lau thing. I had the exact same thing, and with Caballero, and I did the exact same thing as you. And I kept looking at the box score. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You have got to be kidding me. I needed that power.
Yeah, Ray's going to raise, man.
Ray's going to raise. And the 5-game weeks are going to, you know, play like 7-game weeks. A lot of times it's just crazy how it works. It's baseball. It's fantasy baseball. It's unpredictable. We stick to our process, do the best we can.
Hey, can I just say, Vlad, we had Jenny on the show earlier this season, and props to she talked a little bit about the work y'all do for those player projections and how you come about them. Props to y'all over at FTN Fantasy for those projections. They are A+. Y'all are doing the Lord's work in terms of putting those together and really thinking through all of the different possibilities. And it's not easy to put your head in or to put your mind in the head of 30 different managers and all the decision trees that they're going through. So I for one, really appreciate it. And I'm sure Shelly does too.
Yeah. Thank you. No, it's, you know, it's fun. It's also fun, but also it's very helpful for fantasy because you feel just like really dialed in when you notice that, you know, all of a sudden, oh, wait, Mikel Garcia is not leading off. And, oh, whoa, he's playing second base now because they moved CJ Alexander over to third. And Nick Lofton hasn't played the last two games. You know, things like just really in tune in the league. And then it makes your fab decisions and lineup decisions kind of easier. But, yeah, thank you.
Listen up, people. Over the years, I've learned how important hydration is in my workouts and everyday life. It's the key to helping my body move, recover, and just have a good time when I'm exercising and staying active. Things go even better when I'm well hydrated before I even start moving. Noon Hydration doesn't want you to wait to hydrate. They want you to start hydrated. Noom Sport Hydration Tablets hydrate better than water alone. Just drop them in your water, dissolve, and enjoy. They contain 5 essential electrolytes and come in crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade, lemon lime, and many more. They also have non-GMO vegan and gluten-free ingredients and only 1 gram of sugar. Noom hydrates you so you can do more, go further, and recover faster. And that means you can have a heck of a lot more fun. Since hydrated humans have the most fun, head over to shop now on noonlife.com and pick some up today so you're ready for anything. Because anything can happen after noon.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43-9267-V1.
Right, we have one more debate. Oh, this is a fun one.
Yeah, it is a fun one. And I think Shelley is going to moderate this one.
Yeah, I was thinking about one particular player that we're going to bring up while I was exercising today, because I picked him up when he had like this amazing week. So the guy that I'm speaking of is Colton Cowser. So from April 8th to the 14th, he hit 435, 481, and 1.130. I've never actually said a number, like a slug like that before. With 412 RBI, but he's hit 184, 286, 313 since then. But another guy who had a big week was Luis Matos, 385, 385, 731 with 2 homers and 16 RBI, but has gone since then 175, 209, 175. So as I was, you know, working out this afternoon, I was just like, if you had to pick one of these guys for, you know, the remainder of the season, one of these, you know, do you think, like, which one would you rather have, the guy on the good team or, you know, the guy on the good team on the East Coast or the guy on the ho-hum team on the West Coast? Vlad, we'll go with you first.
No, this is a tough one. I remember where Colton Cowser was like, you know, the next Willie Mays, like just from that week or 2 weeks, he was incredible. People were already cashing in their AL Rookie of the Year bets that they probably didn't even make on Cowser, but it was insane. And since then, he's been literally one of the coldest players in baseball. The funny thing is there was word or talk about him possibly getting demoted this weekend because Heston Kjerstad was getting called up and Cowser was the guy they were think, or at least people thought was going to get demoted. Lo and behold, Cowser was out Monday. He plays on Tuesday. What does he do? Hits a home run. So now he's kind of like, you know, a little bit more motivated, but I like the underlying stuff. I mean, the strikeout rate is really high. It's 30%+. He's hitting 230, I believe, but with like an expected average that's 20, 30 points higher than that. And mostly it's me believing in somebody that has really strong, StatCast metrics. So the things that I look at are average exit velocity, barrel rate, and hard hit rate. And all three of those things are elite for him. So like a 15.5% barrel rate is incredible. It's like, you know, top 8 percentile. He's hitting the ball over like nearly 92 miles per hour on average and a hard hit rate over 50%. So and same thing, his X slug is like 70 points greater than his actual slug. And both of those are over 400. So he's been cold, and that's just kind of like the cyclical nature of baseball. Like you feel like at some point he'll just get hot again. And to be hot on the Orioles this year is a league winning strategy. So that's kind of why I'm picking Cowser.
Yeah. And it is really good to see that the Orioles have, you know, his playing time has kind of decreased a little bit, but they haven't demoted him yet. So they must still believe as well. Sarah, Luis Batis, what'd you think?
So I should be really clear that Kowser has been the better player so far, and I don't disagree with anything that Vlad said there. I'm looking at the Fangraphs player rater for 15 teams right now, and Kowser's been worth $6.2 so far this season. Matos has been worth like negative $8.1 this season. So the head-to-head up to this point in time is Kowser, and it's not close. I'm going to take the Matos side of this equation, though, because playing time is king. And one of the things that I am always looking for in terms of who I want on my roster is whether they have an opportunity to play every day and whether they are going to be in the lineup. And the thing that I worry about most with Kowser and the Orioles is just that they're so deep and so stacked that it's a playing time opportunity that he could lose at any given point in time. Vlad's right that they have not taken that playing time opportunity away from him just yet, but they have such a stacked farm system that the second that they need someone to come up who is not struggling, they have a depth of guys that they can go to for that. And I worry about that for Colton Kowser the same way that, you know, I worry about that for any player on a team where there's a lot of options at their particular position. And so Luis Matos, I feel like, has this job locked up. He's an excellent defensive outfielder, and he's a guy who is going to get to play for the San Francisco Giants. And that means that because he's going to get to play and no one is coming for his job, he has a chance to go on many hot streaks during the course of the season. Maybe he has one more hot streak in him. Maybe he has two. Maybe he has three. I don't know. It's a worse team context for sure, but I think you get a stronger playing time guarantee with Luis Matos.
Yeah, and he was, by the way, he was, I mean, it was kind of shocking when he was demoted, I guess, because he had just gone from so hot to so cold. But, you know, for example, and I guess I'm kind of reverse rebuttaling myself, but like Colton Kowser will never really get an opportunity to hit top three in this lineup because the Orioles are such studs. Matos was hitting first, like for the Giants for a while. Like right now they have Brett Wisely hitting first against righties. It's like a rotating thing. And if Helio Ramos, for whatever reason, starts to really cool off, then he'll be at the bottom of the lineup. And, you know, these things are just changed so much. So, yeah, it's crazy. And I wonder when Yaz comes back, Mike Yastrzemski, like, I don't know, someone's got to move. Maybe it'll be like David Villar. I didn't even realize he was back with the team, but we'll see. San Francisco is a crazy place.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy in that sense. I mean, as far as the demotion goes, one of the things that I was thinking about there is it reminded me of the Cubs demoting Pete Crow Armstrong, which is sort of like the demotion for your own good versus the demotion because we are going to see if somebody is hotter than you. And those are two different flavors of demotion in my mind. And for the Giants need Luis Matos to be good, and they need him to stick in that position. They want him to be their leadoff guy, right? And so I just think there's a difference when you have the guy who is supposed to fill the everyday role. Like for the Orioles right now, and you know, we saw what happened. Oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the name right now. The injury at short or second today for the Orioles had me thinking Jackson Holliday might get another shot or somebody might get another shot there for the Orioles. I cannot remember who it was. Mateo, I might be wrong about that. But the I just don't know that Kowser sticks if they find another option there. And I think that Matos is the dude in San Francisco. And so he's going to get a little bit more run.
Yeah, that was great. Both of y'all took the things that I was going to say. So
sorry, Shelly. Sorry, Shelly, we usurped your questions.
No, it's totally fine. Y'all were totally cool. I was just sitting back and enjoying.
Vlad, I do have one question for you. How do you consider crowded playing time situations when you're looking at your roster, when you're thinking about guys you want to bid on, or do you just try to go with a hot hand and see what happens?
So I'm very much looking at things from like a micro perspective of what do I expect in the next couple of weeks as far as put it like this. The one thing I didn't do in the past was account for the other side of my fab decision, meaning if I'm adding somebody who is on the IL that might come back to take their job in a little bit. That's something that I hadn't really done in the past. And I think managing that has really helped me to realize whether somebody has long-term value or am I just streaming them because they have, you know, seven games in really good situations. So, and then platoon splits have become a really, you know, big thing. It's not just, You know, it's because we play a lot of NPC where you've got the half weeks, you can really manipulate and optimize for a series, you know, for like, you know, the Monday through Thursday. And then for the weekend, you know, like I'm looking ahead this weekend, like on my DCs where I need power. Like I already know, I see that the Diamondbacks are going to face the A's where they're going to be two lefties. I know Randall Grichuk is somebody I'm going to bring into my lineup. So I know DC has nothing to do with Fab. I'm kind of rambling here, but like, yeah, I'm just like, try to stay as in tune as much as possible and keep things like as short-term perspective. I'm really out of the mindset of, you know, who do you like rest of season? Because I don't even know what's going to happen, you know, in fantasy, let alone life tomorrow. So I just take it week at a time.
No, that's a really interesting perspective. And honestly, one that I could adopt in my fab and fantasy decisions more. I find myself looking at the long term almost all of the time. And we were talking last week on the show about why defense matters for fantasy and how you calculate it. And I really think it's about those opportunities. It's about who's going to get a chance to stick and get a chance to prove their hit tool because their glove is just so good. But that requires sticking with a guy who might be hitting 145 or below the Mendoza line for a while. And that can really hurt your ratios if that guy's getting everyday playing time. So balancing those things is so crucial to a winning fantasy season. It's interesting to hear your perspective there. I think we are out. We don't need rebuttals here. Shelley, do you have any other questions or things you think we should cover on this debate? This was excellent.
Yeah, I thought it was quite good. I guess if I had to pick one, I would definitely go with Kowser too, but Sarah, you brought up a good point. I mean, his defense is really good. And you know, the Orioles need to win. Like they're going to be in the playoffs. I'm not exactly sure if the Giants are. So yeah, they might go in a different direction, but if I had to pick one, it'd be Kowser.
Great stuff. Love learning so much from both of you. You both make my fantasy decisions each week better. Vlad, where can people find you and your content as they're trying to make their fantasy decisions each week? And how can they find your stuff?
Just type in ftnfantasy.com. And, you know, it's a subscription for the season. We do a lot of work in the preseason. Usually have a draft guide that comes out. Shelley was in our draft guide the last few years. I think everybody knows, crushed in the online championship in NFBC last year. And she wrote an article about her success and some strategies there. And so we have a really nice team that is very, sort of mid to high, skilled centric. So people that are really into fantasy and fab decisions. So we do a lot of strategy articles, a lot of in-depth stuff. You know, drops, disasters to avoid, you know, dig into the bullpen. So yeah, ftnfantasy.com, and then fantastic projections, I think, that we put a lot of time into. Frank, our chief data guy and modeler, basically said, like, this last week we had like 4 million simulations, which to me, I don't know even like what the heck that means, but I guess that's, you know, good. So so yeah. And then my trusted guy column for Fab on the weekend. So yeah, FTN Fantasy.
Great stuff. You should follow Vlad at RotoGut on the socials. Excellent follow and always putting out great content. We're going to end the show the way we always end the show with our love it or leave it. One thing from baseball news this week that you were thrilled about or over. Vlad, as our guest, you get to go first.
You know, there are these articles that come in and I see them almost every day and I'm kind of tired of clicking on them and I actually haven't been. And it's MLB trade deadline, predictions for something that is several weeks away, 5 weeks at this point, and the races, like for example in the NL for the wild cards, are also close. The managers, the front offices don't even know what they need yet, or if they're buyers or sellers. There's just so much speculation, and things change just as rapidly as they do in our day-to-day, you know, fantasy. So it's fun. I mean, everybody loves to read about trades and make predictions and talk about it and send, you know, fantasy offers and predict, you know, real life MLB simulation trades. But like, I don't know. I feel like it takes up too much of my time of getting down to business and actually, you know, managing my fantasy teams and writing content. So I'm just like avoiding and ignoring all of that type of stuff.
Yo, preach. This is one of my pet peeves. If you've been following me on social media for any amount of time, once a year, twice a year, about this time of year, I just tell people I'm out of all trade discussions that don't have somebody sourced close to one of the teams dealing with the actual trade. And what I mean by that is people will say things like, sources say, and I'm like, yes, those are sources from some other team that would like this trade to happen that don't care at all about anything other than they would really love this player to be available. I want sources close to the team making the deal, talking about how they're going to make the deal. And if you don't have that, I'm out. I just can't with all of these tools and shenanigans that people go through this time of year. Shelly, how do you feel about trade discourse?
Yeah, I don't like it. And one thing that I do is the only person that I have alerts on my phone for Twitter, like tweets, is Jeff Passan. Because he'll tell me whenever a trade goes through and I'm not duped, right? So that's all I care about. When a trade happens, he'll tell me. He'll let me know. I don't need to read all the rumors.
10-10, 100%. I agree on all of that. Shelly, what is your love it or leave it this week?
Well, we kind of talked about mine a little bit earlier when we were talking about Miami. But poor Max Meyer. Like, I know that he's working. I think he's working on a changeup, some type of pitch in the minor leagues, and he's not pitching all that well. But with all of the injuries to the Marlins rotation, they're calling up Valente Belazo. I'm probably mispronouncing that, but I have never heard of this man. But he's getting his first major league start, which is really good for him. I'm really happy for him. where is Max Meyer? Like, I really feel bad for the guy because he's probably like, what am I, like chopped liver? Like, come on. Like, it's really odd what they're doing. Maybe they have a reason, but I don't understand it at all.
I did not mean to steal your thunder here. I did not realize this was your love it or leave it when I was ranting about Max Meyer and the Marlins earlier. But truly, what did he like kick someone's puppy? What is going on here? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's. And
the crazy part is they did the reverse stretching out with him, and it felt like overly cautious. And I feel like there's some like behind the scenes vibes or just something we don't know about because he was fantastic. I mean, I don't think there's only reason to do that. And even in the minors, like I'm, you know, tracking his pitch counts, like they're babying him to the extreme. And maybe they were oversensitive with all the issues they've had, you know, Braxton Garrett now and, you know, Lizardo, Alcantara, obviously. And so I don't know. It's tough. Like, you know, we don't always know what's going behind the scenes, but hey, it sucks for our fantasy teams. Like, we want Max Meyer.
Yeah, it's a very weird situation. And honestly, I don't think it's going to help them. They did this with Yuri Perez last year and he got Tommy John anyway. So just let the man pitch. Let Max Meyer pitch. Bring Max Meyer to the people. I don't get it at all. My love it or leave it. I think we're like straight leave it's this week, which is rare for us. That's not normally our MO, but maybe we're just cranky today. Sticking stuff ejections are very weird in person. So I was at Sunday's game at Wrigley Field where Edwin Diaz was ejected. And I've seen the sticky stuff machinations before. So this was the second time I had seen something like this. I was also at the game at Yankee Stadium where Domingo Herman got checked. And then they told him to go wash his hands. And then he came back out. He was throwing a perfect game. He washed his hands. He was no longer throwing a perfect game. And they let him stay in the game for hashtag reasons. It was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. But the Diaz ejection was super strange. There's no announcement or anything that happens. Like, I happened to see the umpires crowding around him and had to guess what was going on and saw the umpire do the motion. And so I knew what had happened. The people behind us were just like, this is taking a long time. What's going on? I'm like, oh, their pitcher definitely just got thrown out. It took about 4 minutes before there was something on the board that said Edwin Diaz has been ejected from tonight's ball game. And look, there has to be a faster way to communicate that to the people in the ballpark. I'm sure that they were communicating that on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball because it's a great crew and they do an awesome job. But the people who were sitting in the stands spent a very long time not knowing what was going on. And Drew Smith was throwing warm-up pitches by the time anybody had been made aware that there was an ejection. And that just seems like a fail on MLB's part. Announce it somehow. You announce the like replay reviews and all that jazz. Announce an ejection. It's not hard. That is where we are going to leave it for this week. Shelly and I are, as always, findable on the social media where you can find our baseball takes and ideas. Shelly, where can people find you talking about Juan Soto and lamenting the fact that he's a Yankee?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be lamenting that for a couple more seasons because
I think you are.
I know, and it's I'm already heartbroken about it. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter at ShellyV_643.
We can have a whole segment next season if you want on Juan Soto as a Yankee. We can just like talk about reasons we wish Juan Soto was on a team that we didn't hate.
It'll just be me blabbering with tears, essentially.
Vlad, thank you again for joining us. And where can people find you on the socials?
Oh, I am at RotoGut there on the socials. I think I'm only really active on Twitter. I feel like anything else I check maybe once a week. And then I have never been on TikTok. Like, they keep wanting me to download the app. I just can't do it. I'm just too old. I'm in my 40s or just like don't have the time. But yeah, Twitter is where to find me usually.
What was that?
Oh, I was going to say, thank you so much, by the way, for having me. I love the format of this, the feuds, debates. I feel like we maybe could have had five other topics or go another hour. But this was awesome. And it's like a nice change of pace from the everyday type of analysis and podcast that we're hearing. So I appreciate both your work and glad to call you both friends for many years now.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. TikTok, I'm definitely too old for TikTok. I tried for like 1 week during the pandemic. I was like, I can't dance like this on camera. I wouldn't even know how to set up the camera to capture it. What are we doing here, people? You can find me on the socials at BCB_Sarah. There is no H on the Sarah. And if you're on Blue Sky for whatever reason, it's at BCB Sarah because they don't allow underscores on Blue Sky, which was a weird thing to figure out. You can find our show at PL Fantasy Feud. Please follow and subscribe. We are still a relatively new podcast, so all of those subscriptions and ratings and reviews help us out tremendously. We'll be back next week with all of the debates that should inform your fantasy baseball decisions. Until then.
Listen up, people. Over the years, I've learned how important hydration is in my workouts and everyday life. It's the key to helping my body move, recover, and just have a good time when I'm exercising and staying active. Things go even better when I'm well hydrated before I even start moving. Noon Hydration doesn't want you to wait to hydrate. They want you to start hydrated. Noon Sport Hydration Tablets hydrate better than water alone. Just drop them in your water, dissolve, and enjoy. They contain 5 essential electrolytes and come in crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade, lemon lime, and many more. They also have non-GMO vegan and gluten-free ingredients and only 1 gram of sugar. Noon hydrates you so you can do more, go further, and recover faster. And that means you can have a heck of a lot more fun. Since hydrated humans have the most fun, head over to shop now on noonlife.com and pick some up today so you're ready for anything, because anything can happen after noon.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erlita, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erlita is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erlita may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erlita can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erlita is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erlita.com. CP43926 7V1.